Hello, and welcome to the American Marketing Association's Marketing Power Podcast, Be Honest, the connection between truthfulness and powerful marketing. I'm your host, Nancy Piccalo, Senior Director of Online Content for the AMA. We're very excited to welcome our special guest, Jonathan Salem Baskin, author of Histories of Social Media, 2,000 Years of Do's and Don'ts, now in its second edition, and his new forthcoming book, Tell the Truth, Honesty is Your Most Powerful Marketing Tool, which he co-authored with Sue Unerman. Jonathan leads Baskin Associates, Inc., a marketing decisions consultancy. He writes the award-winning blog, Dim Bulb, a daily post about 2,000 years of social behavior do's and don'ts at Today in the Histories of Social Media, and is a regular columnist on CMO Leadership in Advertising Age. He is also a member of the advisory board of SocialMediaToday.com and a senior fellow emeritus at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. Jonathan, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Nancy. It's a thrill to be here.
Well, when it comes to business, especially the business of marketing, can you tell me why you believe that honesty is the best policy?
The short answer is because you can't avoid it. So it's much easier to be honest than it is to try to either lie or ignore the truth and then try to remember how you did it and try to keep trying to get away with it. We read so much and talk so much about the social media revolution, and I'm willing to go out on a limb here and say that the revolution is actually over, and social media won. And that means that everybody is online in one way, shape, or form at some point, and what they're looking for is actually the truth about things, not necessarily just to be entertained or to have their time idly passed. So the question of honesty really isn't a question. It's a reality. The question is, how can brands and businesses address it and still differentiate their brands and establish unique relationships with their customers? And that's why Sue and I researched and wrote Tell the Truth, because we think we figured out how.
Well, brands today aren't always known for their high level of honesty, I think.
That's an understatement.
How would you rate the honesty quotient of brands today, and why do you think it's so hard for those who aren't to be truthful?
Yeah, boy, that's an entire conversation in and of itself. Two quick points. One would be that Sue and I are making the case that the opposite of truthfulness or truth isn't falsehood. It's simply the lack of truth. It's truth agnosticism. It's empty calories of content. So a lot of the marketing and the branding we get in this day and age, 2012, is sort of like a truth-free zone. It's not dishonest. It's not falsehood. It's just not truthful. And again, in the book, we get into how we define truth in terms of it being supportable, relevant, sustainable, meaningful, a lot of qualities that actually combine to make something truthful versus not. So it's not that marketing and branding is false. It's simply that it doesn't. We don't use the occasions that we truthfully pay for to necessarily communicate with the customers things they really need and will rely upon. And I think that the second point is that we do that because we're operating under a whole bunch of rules that were developed in the 20th century. And even though it is 2012, my experience is that a lot of marketing and a lot of brand identity is still based on very old ideas about our ability to attach things to the ideas of brands and then through the force and the power of marketing delivery make those attachments concrete. So I can decide that my bottle of soda pop has all these extra attributes that, truthfully, I've picked out of the ether. I've made up from scratch. But by being creative and then buying my way into the consumer's consciousness, I can convince them that they, in fact, are attached and they are real. And I think what Sue and I are, well, I know what Sue and I have found is that making those attachments is a lot harder than it used to be and a lot less sustainable versus finding those truths within a brand or within a business and delivering on them so that people can rely on them and use them and sustainably rely on use them. So it's not that we're lying in the world, in the marketing world, it's just that we're missing the opportunities there are to tell the truth.
Great points. You referenced in that last question this concept of empty calories of content, and
yeah.
I think today's social channels are probably guilty of some of that. In your last book, Histories of Social Media, you address the many do's and don'ts of working with today's social channels. Can you talk about whether you believe this pervasive use of social that's being, used both from brands and from consumers today is making it easier or more difficult for brands to be honest with their customers? And where do you think brands are going wrong in social when it comes to being authentic and transparent?
Again, short answer would be we're talking about two very different experiences of the same phenomenon. From a consumer perspective, from a citizen, from a people, person perspective, the peer-to-peer revolution is immense, and it's far bigger than any social platform necessarily. It's this ability for us as a community or communities of people to share, vet, and rate information over time and actually get at truth. It's a immense tool, and in my last book, Histories of Social Media, I talked about how that idea of sharing and vetting and rating information, those behaviors are nowhere near new. They're really old things that we've done for centuries. We just have a really cool new tool with which to do it, and we could probably do it more often and more efficiently and more broadly. From a brand perspective, we're still thinking like we're in the 20th century, and that the social revolution, this social tool, is really a distribution platform for our branded content. So we're going to come up with these fantasies about what brands should be. We're going to populate it in entertaining, fun ways on social platforms, and people are actually going to engage with brands, and that's the basis of our relationships with them. I think the challenge for business and for their brands is to realize that consumers don't want relationships with brands online. They want to talk about brands online. And the idea that I'm going to go online to have a relationship directly with my toothpaste or my underarm deodorant is goofy, versus I am going to go online to go vet, share, and rate information about any and every one of those products or services. So the challenge for, and again, honesty, I'm not even certain that I'm less concerned about honesty than I am simply with truthfulness, which is a little different than honest. I mean, you know, every truth is honest, but it's not necessarily, honesty doesn't always mean telling the truth. It's sort of rhombuses are squares, but not all squares are rhombuses. So the punchline for business is to figure out how to communicate truths that are relevant to their customers via social tools versus giving them those empty calories, and understand that honesty is something that you have to be, you have to deliver, and you have to do so consistently. But truth could be that this toothpaste will give you a brighter smile. Now, can I honestly guarantee that in every instance, in every occasion, for every customer, that's gonna happen? I can't honestly say that, but it is a truth. That the way the brand, the way the ingredients have been concocted, the way we've delivered, and if used properly, it should work. And as a brand truth, the business should be allowed to declare that at the top of their lungs. So the challenge is to get it through our heads that we're allowed to sell stuff, and the key to selling stuff is telling people the truth about what it could be and what it could do.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was interesting in your book. It seems that you're positing that, you know, brands work towards truthfulness with their customers, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it, in fact, can be a competitive advantage for them. Can you expand on this a little bit for our listeners and perhaps provide an example of a brand today which you think is effectively using honesty to its advantage?
Sure. It's funny. One of the problems we have in marketing is we always are trying to – we're all liberal arts people, and we try to assign – you know, everything has a higher purpose. And this, I know one of the fads right now in marketing is to market with meaning. And if you think about it too hard, though, it's not truthful. You know, it's I'm going to go buy my way into your heart and soul because no longer can I convince your mind to do something, so I'm going to kind of do a little fib here and claim that I'm making the world a better place. In terms of what is the competitive advantage, it's not to go buy meaning or go buy an idea or go buy an angle. It's to achieve a truthful relationship with your customer, which means they understand what you're about, they understand what you're doing, and they can rely on it, and it's sustainable. So the examples would actually be twofold. One would be an airline like Southwest Airlines, which really goes to great lengths to communicate what it does as well as what it doesn't do, so that when things fall short, when there are problems with timetables or delivery or, you know, arrivals or schedules or what have you, generally the Southwest customer has a relationship with Southwest that is based on the truthfulness of what that business and what that brand delivers. So if they're willing to cut them some more slack when it falls short, and more importantly, they know what they can rely on. Truthfulness is the basis of that competitive advantage for Southwest. It's not that they've made a great promise or they have a great image or that they claim to be something they're not. It's a truthful thing that they sustain. And again, you think about how many brands or businesses allow their customers to think, or they proactively promote things that may or may not really be completely deliverably true, but they're okay. They'll tolerate it because they're buying the product, and then they're surprised when the slightest thing happens and the customer flips on them and is willing to cut them no slack whatsoever. The corollary to the Southwest example would be, do you remember a couple of years ago when that video came out, the viral video on YouTube called United Breaks Guitars?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was a big deal, right? The guy's guitar gets smashed on United, and he makes a video saying United smashes guitars. And I remember reading about it, and it was in every social media presentation at every marketing event. And it was just proof that the power of social media to share truth and share this fact. And you realize that United reported its best quarter in profits and performance that next quarter anyway. And I'd argue it's because we already knew the truth. The
right.
movie didn't tell us anything we didn't already know.
Right.
So the idea of truth being a competitive advantage is, how do you acknowledge the reality and truthfulness of what you do and make sure that your customer gets it and that you're talking to the right people about it so that they buy it?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you think about it, it's the only competitive advantage, because anything else is up to – it could be copied. You'd have to spend extra money to perpetuate it, whereas truth just kind of is.
Right.
So it's very powerful.
Well, there's no question, I think, that truth definitely can be a competitive advantage. I guess the cynic in me is wondering whether today's C-suite and marketing structures within these brands are prepared to be brutally honest with their customers. And so from your perspective, what do you think a brand needs to do to actually convert to become an honesty-centric organization?
Yeah, good question. Well, in the book we talk about, you know, we say, let's stop talking about truth as sort of a philosophical good. And again, I could care less whether or not, you know, a business or a brand is socially redeeming. For that matter, you know, you look at things like oil companies, and if only they would admit the fact that their job is not actually to be socially redeeming, because we already know that. But think how much money gets spent trying to convince us otherwise. So in other words, sort of just admit the business you're in and be honest with yourselves is probably the overriding step. But in the book, we talk about really defining truth in actionable qualities, and we found 8 of them. 4 of them have to do with how you develop your content, and 4 of them have to do with how you deliver it. So that really the steps to being more truthful and more honest is just start doing more truthful and honest things. And I hate to talk about, you know, try to turn a noun into a verb and say the answer is just to do more truth, but it kind of is, because truth has qualities. It has, you know, it acknowledges the realities we already know, like I was just talking about in terms of United Breaks Guitars. We already knew baggage claim was horrible. Or, you know, for a Chevron or an oil company, we already know that they suck gunk out of the ground and it pollutes. But so, you know, why not just acknowledge the 800-pound gorilla and figure out how to be creatively and inspirationally meaningful based on that, instead of trying to ignore it or obfuscate it? That's an obvious one. Another quality of truthfulness and being truthful is to simply have a third party join you in whatever declaration or statement you're making, so that, you know, why would any business or any brand in this day and age announce something or do something and then wait for the market to react when we have this digital tool that pretty much can engage people on the front end before things even come out? Why is anything ever announced in a vacuum? Why is there a slight hesitation between news or new product and reaction? Why isn't it the same moment, so that we know the truth of the announcement or the action right then and there? In terms of context, again, there are 4 qualities. I'll give you 2 quick ones. One is, truthful things have immediate utility. Matter of fact, we found that the longer we as consumers, we as people, have to wait to figure out if something's accurate or true or not, the less likely we're going to believe it, even if it is. So things that are going to be true are true immediately. They're true as soon as possible. And they're also relevant and useful as soon as possible. So if a business or a brand is trying to deliver truth and be honest to a customer that isn't necessarily looking for that or using that at that point in time, however demographically or otherwise behaviorally appropriate they are, you're probably talking to the wrong person at the wrong time. And again, it is more likely that whatever it is you're saying, and we found this in a number of instances, Nancy, where brands were actually declaring absolute God's honest truth about things, But because they were delivering it in the wrong format at the wrong time, it wasn't believable. Or it just fell on deaf ears and wasn't useful. So if you think through how you develop your content and where and how you deliver it, you can approach things more truthfully versus getting caught up in philosophical debates about what truth is.
Well, it sounds really like a new approach to marketing overall.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you know, I also thought it was interesting in your book you were talking at length about truth in advertising, which is sort of one of the big ones for consumers anyway. So given the state of advertising, both past and present, do you think it's possible to change this? And what do you think needs to change in the advertising industry specifically?
Thanks a lot. So the bigger question is that nobody wakes up in the just like nobody wakes up in the morning wanting to have an intimate relationship with their toothpaste necessarily. I also don't think anybody wakes up and says, "I don't like magazine ads," or "I don't like broadcast television commercials." There's never been anything wrong with the medium or the idea of advertising or the media with which it's propagated, in so much that there's never anything necessarily right about it either. What always determined right or wrong or good or bad or truthful or not was what we chose to put into it. It befuddles me the billions of dollars that are spent every year to put content into advertising that lacks truthfulness, which means it's not false, it's just irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It's on brand, wildly entertaining, sexy, funny, what have you, punchline to a joke, part of an integrated marketing campaign and all the other excuses we make, but ultimately there's no there, and that's why people have rejected advertising. It's not because the idea of being advertised to is bad. It's because businesses do it badly.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things Sue and I found is there's an immense opportunity to use those billions of dollars more effectively instead of saying the answer is to give up on it and slowly shift them into other media, digital media, which, oh, by the way, we're just kind of replicating the same problem. We're just doing it in a different medium now.
Right.
So we see an immense opportunity to actually use those dollars to be more effective. Now, to your second part, which is the tough part, your question is how the hell do you do that? It takes a different conversation, not only in the marketing department, but at the agencies and also in the boardroom. We have to start as marketers and as business people thinking about and talking about brands differently. And Sue and I hoped in the early development stage of this book, we were really thinking we were writing really a manifesto. We kind of stepped back from that a little bit because we wanted it to be more of a really specific hands-on tool, so less, you know, clue train manifesto, let's just jump on this idea, and more, here are, you know, gazillions of examples, and literally every chapter has a 10-point checklist of how you might test out these ideas in your business. So we wanted to be very useful and very specific, but it's going to take a different conversation. I mean, I got to tell you, I work with clients all the time and have worked in business for 30 years. Rarely does the word truth ever come out of anybody's mouth in any conversation about marketing content. And again, it's not that we're lying, it's just that we don't have that lens, we're not using that lens. And I think what Sue and I are trying to communicate with this book is that while we're not using that lens to define how we go about developing content and deliver it, it's the only lens that consumers are using.
Exactly. And I think that while it's true that people aren't using the word truth, what you're hearing a lot is the term authenticity. And I'm wondering if you can comment on whether you think that's the same. And if not, then, you know, are marketers focusing on sort of the wrong thing?
Yeah, I have a problem with authenticity only because it's like talking about honesty in a way too. All truth is authentic, but is all authenticness or authenticity truthful? I don't know. Couldn't you be authentically false?
Right.
So it's one of those mushy words that I think we marketers use because we like the wiggle room. We like sort of being able to define things more broadly or squishy so that we can bring more creative ideas to bear. We can kind of close one eye and squint the other one and go, yeah, it kind of fits. Bottom line is if it's not truthful, it's not truthful. And you can be authentically false and you can be honestly disregarding your customer. It's neither action or effort is truth. So I would say authenticity and meaning and transparency, which is another one, I would sort of put on a back burner and say enough with this and let's talk about truth. And if we're uncomfortable about it, let's talk about why.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seems to me that at least some brands are inching towards that conversation. For instance, JCPenney recently launched a marketing campaign earlier, I think this year, on being fair and square and focusing on that. Do you see that brands are starting to focus on, you know, the idea of straight talk with their customers, fair dealing, all that kind of thing, or is it a marketing ploy?
Yeah. Well, you know, the conspiracist, you know, my cynicism, I don't know if it's a ploy. I mean, first, the JCPenney, good for them. I think it's brilliant. This whole idea of, I don't know if you're a Gap shopper, but, you know, if you're a Gap shopper, you know the cycles of their pricing. You know that whatever they come out with, in X number of weeks, they're going to slash it to Y, and then X number of weeks later, they're going to slash it to Z and put it in the back of the store. Their pricing is, and I don't mean to highlight them only, but a lot of retail apparel pricing, especially in women's fashion, has this sort of built-in falsehood. It is, in this instance, it is falsehood. You know the initial price isn't the real price.
Mm-hmm.
So for JCPenney to take a very old idea, which is the idea of the no-sale store, and revive it and mean it, if they mean it, I think is brilliant, and hats off to them. It's, I think, a smart strategy. Now, I can quibble with, again, how they develop that content and how they deliver it, because to your point, why should any of us believe it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and here could be an instance where they're doing absolutely the most truthful thing, but because they haven't really thought about how do you communicate truth, it's still we don't believe it. So, but hats off to them if they're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of more brands moving toward it, again, Sue and I found – we did, I think, something like 50 case histories in the book where different brands were doing different aspects of being truthful and doing them wonderfully. You know, so there's 24-hour fitness in L.A. that's, you know, telling their customers, my words, not the words of the creative, but effectively saying, if you join a gym, it doesn't guarantee you're going to look better or lose weight automatically.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what you have to do. And they're actually starting a conversation with their customers about how to succeed versus just allowing for the fact that 70%+ of people who join gyms usually quit 6 months later because they don't meet their goals. So, you know, they're doing a good job. But the Guardian newspaper in the UK is not just letting readers, you know, post comments that are either flaming or praising every article and thinking that's engagement. They're actually outsourcing research on stories they're writing so that they actually, the readers are collaborating on the product. So that's an honest, truthful way of delivering the brand and the brand promise. There are examples like that across industries, across verticals. But, you know, can I hold up a brand and say one is, you know, particularly truthful? Not only can't I do that, but, again, that's not really the challenge here.
Right.
It's not a question of being held up as being truthful. It's doing truthful things so that you have a committed repeat customer base that relies on your business. And in that instance, we found a bunch of examples.
Well, I think this is a really great topic. I think it's really important for the marketing audience right now and brands to start to address. And we could talk about this for probably several more hours, but we are running out of time, so I just had one last question.
Sure.
If you could just share with us, Jonathan, what advice you might have for brands that are internally struggling with this issue of truthfulness and honesty.
Yeah.
If they want to move in that direction in 2012, what advice would you have?
The first advice would be buy my book.
Of course.
The second bit of advice would be one of the greatest litmus tests of truthfulness is utility. And I would offer up that anytime you're looking at whether at the campaign level or at even the specific tactical level of a particular buy or particular activity, if you didn't do it, would your customer not only acknowledge and notice that you hadn't done it, but would they arguably miss it? If the answer to that question is no, right away you probably have a hint that there's maybe some truth missing or an opportunity to communicate truth that you're not using. If what you do as a marketer isn't, if you will, sort of like unavoidably necessary and useful to your consuming public, you're probably not dealing in the world of truth. You're dealing in the world of, again, brand image and transparency and recognition and awareness and all those other kind of mushy words. If it's truthful, it's almost as if your customer would want more of it. not less of it, and certainly not simply tolerate that which you do. So that's a great litmus test just right off the bat, sort of a go-no-go decider of whether or not there's truth in what you're doing. If people need it, if people would want more of it, it's probably truthful. If they're enduring it or you're going to great lengths to make it palatable to them, it's probably missing some.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. These have all been really valuable insights about brand truth, and I certainly gives our listeners lots of food for thought, I'm sure. We've been talking to Jonathan Salem-Baskin today. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening to this edition of our AMA podcast series. I hope it's been a good learning and listening experience for you. Look for information on other upcoming podcasts by visiting marketingpower.com/podcast. To learn more about Jonathan's book, Tell the Truth, Honesty is the Most Powerful Marketing Tool, visit his website at baskinbrand.com, or you can order the book on amazon.com. Until next time, I've been your host, Nancy Bacala. Thanks for joining us.